speaker, and her name is Carol C.
Hi, family. I'm Carol. I'm an addict. Very grateful, grateful addict. And I thank God for everything, especially Narcotics Anonymous, because I tell you, I'm sure y'all all know, if you don't, if you're new, Narcotics Anonymous is the greatest place on earth. It's like nothing I could have ever dreamed up, you know, this place here. And then I'm more grateful for the literature. And that's because, like, I came here, you know, thinking I knew a whole lot of stuff. You know, I need to tell y'all, like, I had, you know, some education, and I had people tell me I was smart in paper and things, and you know, my disease told me I was real smart, that, like, I had a lot of answers to, like, everything. And I found out that wasn't true, but I found some solution and some relief from that in the literature. And, you know, and it never, ever... I mean, I've never, like, read the literature and it not applied to where I was at. That still, like, amazes me. But then I know the power of God, you know, through y'all. So I say that, you know, I guess first I need to say that I definitely qualify to be here. You know, it talks about me and why are we here. I live to use and use to live. And I always had to have something different, you know. And I thought I found it in drugs. I was never enough, as long as I can remember. You know, and I always had to have more. You know, I always remember wanting to be something else that I wasn't. I grew up with a lot of things. You know, my family is kind of had, we had a lot of things, had a lot of educated people in my family. And to them, those things mattered. So I was raised to think that those things mattered, you know, and, but I knew that I was empty on the inside. And I could see that, you know, that pattern real clearly. In fact, when I got here and looked at the second step and it talked about being restored to sanity, that's where I thought I was different, because I truly didn't remember having any sanity, you know, to be restored to. So I thought that was my out cause, that this wasn't going to work for me. You know, I really believed that for a while. And I think that I needed to change anything about the way I thought. I thought I just needed to stop using dope. That's all. All I wanted to do was take the drugs out. Like I told y'all, because in the beginning, even before the drugs, everything I picked up, I was never, like, I never did anything socially. You know, I remember the first time I stole something, I stole a candy bar. The next week, I was stealing cases of candy bars and selling them. You know what I'm saying? For real. And cases of cigarettes. You know, and I didn't have to do that, but I just, you know, because I got away with stealing, and then I got, you know, away with selling them. I don't know. And then, and it was like that with everything. The first time I started having sex, that was it. You know, I don't remember ever not wanting to. First time I started smoking reefer, like the next week, I was stealing money out of my mother's pocketbook, and I was saving roaches in the windowsills and unrolling them like I had to have it, you know, from day one. And the first time I started smoking crack, okay, no. The first time I smoked crack, I took a hit, and I remember liking it so much, I said, I ain't never doing this again. And that never lasted a whole year and a half, maybe, right? But when I came back to it, a year and a half later, by that time I was selling it at the Foxy Playground on Georgia Avenue. I was a bartender, and I was selling it to them because, you know, I wasn't like them. And I ended up deciding that I needed to try it. You know, I think my husband, he had a dope habit, and he was smoking it all up, trying to kick one of those times on the three-day thing. And I was like, he's smoking up all this. You know, I think I want to try it. And that was a Tuesday. So I picked up crack on a Tuesday for my second attempt, and I ain't never put it down. Like, it was no social nothing for me. So from day one on Tuesday, I smoked until I hit a bottom, like a year and a half later, I think. And that was through a pregnancy. I got pregnant. I smoked every day through that pregnancy because I couldn't stop, you know. And that took me to a treatment center, seven treatment centers. I've been through a total of like 11 treatment centers total. And, you know, today my clean date is August 2nd, 1997. And I'm real grateful for that clean date. The first one I had was after coming out of treatment in 88, I stayed clean for almost 4 years, I did the fellowship. I came here. I came to meetings. I was at all the functions. I was sponsoring people. I was in service. You know, back then they used to say if you had a year or more, raise your, you could sponsor people. I didn't really hear the part about having to work a knowledge of the steps. So, you know, like I was missing that. And I just, you know, and that's what I did. So I hung out in the fellowship. And, you know, I always say, like I used to say, I haven't said this in a long time, but I used to say that I'm addicted to anything that made me feel good regardless of the consequences. So when I put the dope down, that was the money, still the lifestyle. I never really gave up the lifestyle. Food, shopping, the finding ways and means to get more. I continued to do all that while I was in here doing the fellowship. And I had a male sponsor because I didn't like women as I didn't like me. You know, I understand that today. I didn't know that then. So, you know, I kind of really wasn't taking too many suggestions other than to keep coming back. And one important thing, though, from that period that I can say is when I went to my first outside meeting, and it was in Jamaica, Queens in 1988, I remember the love. It was like this hole-in-the-wall place, you know. And but y'all told me you'll love me till I learn to love myself. And that just, like, I remember the feeling. I didn't know what it meant because I didn't even know. Like, I thought I loved myself because I confused arrogance and conceit with self-love and self-esteem. Two have nothing to do with each other. I was like a true egomaniac with an inferiority complex. You know, and so, like, I had no understanding that I didn't love myself, but when I heard y'all say that, I remember the goosebumps that I got. I remember the feeling that I got from those hugs, and I keep coming back. And at that time, I didn't know that's what was missing from my life. I was just there, but I remember the feeling. And still today, when I talk about it, I get the goosebumps from that love. So I kept chasing that feeling, and I kept coming to the meetings back then, that first year. And I couldn't get 60 days clean, but I was going to 3 or 4 meetings a day in New York because, like, nobody else had a job, I guess. That's all we did. We went to 3 or 4 meetings a day, and we hung out at the diners in between. And so I did that, and I kept getting 59 days, 57 days, and 59 days, and I kept using. And I remember my last little bottom there. I had a few bottoms, but my last little bottom there, I had got this bright idea that I was going to get a package because they had these little $3 caps you could sell for $20 down here. And so I got paid, I got a welfare check, and I bought like 48 caps and got on the Greyhound bus with a pipe and the 48 caps because I was going to come down to D.C. to sell them. I don't know what the pipe was, just in case or whatever. I don't know. And I spent the entire ride in the bathroom smoking, right? And, like, nobody turned me in to the driver. And, you know, and I remember my lighter ran out, and I opened up the bathroom door and let the smoke out and asked the guys for a light, and they asked for a hit. I said no, and you know, but I took their light, and I mean, and I told people I had diarrhea, and I held the bathroom hostage for all the way from Port Authority to the bus station on, I think it was K Street then or wherever it was, downtown. And I got here with 13 caps left, by the way, you know, and that lasted a couple of days, and then I ran back into treatment in PI. And I remember, I think I heard something there that made me want to stay for a minute. And that's how I stayed here those first 4 years doing the fellowship. And it was that feeling that I got just coming around here, the hugs and the love. And I like thrived off of that, you know. But because I wasn't doing no step work, I understand today. I was empty on the inside. And I remember it was like March, I remember the date, March 2nd, 1992. I had moved to Baltimore, and I went into a meeting. And I stopped going to meetings like about 3 months. And I went to a meeting, and they said, and I didn't even know what I was going to say, but I went in there, and I raised my hand and shared that I wanted to use. And, of course, y'all do what we do after the meeting. The women came to me and said, let's go, you know, let's go hang out. And I said, nah, I'll be all right. And I went and used, like, 6 hours later. And I need to tell y'all, like, you know, I'd never used in Baltimore, but we know. So I went to my neighborhood. I knew exactly who to go to. But it was a process because we lived in the suburbs. It took 6 out from, like, 1 in the afternoon till 6 in the evening, and I never thought to pick up the phone and call someone because I was empty on the inside. I couldn't call this big old network I had and say, I want to use, come help me. You know, and it wasn't until, like, 6 in the evening. And so, you know, when I think back on that, but that was like a 6-month process from March 2nd, 92 to August 2nd, 92. I smoked continuously, did just what y'all told me, we pick up right where we leave off, you know, and the misery, I still remember. I mean, like, I could never put into words the misery that I felt using knowing that I had a choice. It was horrible, you know, spiritually. And so on the last day, I had another bright idea. I got some money. I was going to get a package, and I bought some big amount. I don't even remember what it was, something I could get for a few $100s. And I thought that somebody was going to come to my house and buy it. So while I was waiting for people to come to buy it, I was there smoking it all day. And like, you know, I was never in the business, but this is what I thought. That was the bright idea. So I spent that whole day smoking. And I remember my heart beating real fast and saying, I think I'm going to have a heart attack and taking another hit. But I never thought I was suicidal, you know. But I just remember that. I kept doing it all day. And eventually, I had whatever we have in the form of OD with crack, because I ended up in an ambulance. I couldn't breathe, you know, like my veins had tightened up or something. And I was in an ambulance with tubes in me and ended up at the hospital. And laying on that stretcher, all I could think about was what was left on that plate. Because I still had some on the plate. And I had a brother-in-law who I thought was going to find it and smoke it. And that's all I could think about. Even in the midst of the prayers of asking God, you know, can you help me out of this? I won't do it again. So when I got home that morning, the first thing I did was went to that plate. And I tried to take another hit. And I felt these cracklings in my arm, whatever it was in my veins. I felt it immediately, and I put it down. But I was still empty on the inside. So I said I wasn't going to do that no more, but I couldn't call anyone. I was like August of 92, and I told y'all my clean date is August 2nd, 97. But I never smoked any more crack during that period. What I did was just not use for like 18 months, and then I decided that I really wasn't like y'all because I never thought I was anyway. You know, I had a lot of yets. I came here that first time when I was doing the fellowship, and like I told y'all, I really believed I was different. So I had decided that, because I stayed clean for 18 months, no meetings, no talking to anybody, I really was all right, and I could smoke a joint, because I really never thought I needed to not smoke reefer either. I didn't believe that. Y'all just told me. So I could smoke a joint, and I could drink a wine cooler. And I did that occasionally over the next 5 years. And one of the things, I had married two husbands that both shot dope, and so they kept me thinking I was a lot better than, because I didn't shoot dope. And I remember at the end, in August of 97, the only thing that looked, everybody around me was using, and the only thing that looked good to me was a shot of dope. All I wanted to do was not. That's how hopeless I felt. And I ended up in treatment, thank God. And this time, when I got out, you know, I really knew that I needed to change, you know, I mean, on the inside. And so I'd made a decision to try the steps this time. You know, y'all said that might help me. And I saw the joy, you know, going on in people's lives. So this time I got a female sponsor, and I just made a commitment to the step work process, and I got in service, and that's what I've been doing, you know, not all the time, but most of the time, which brings me to this topic. And this topic for me is really, I mean, like right now, it's right on time in my life, because I've been clean like almost 8.5 years, miserable most of it, because, you know, I still had this idea that my thinking really was all right, you know. I mean, truly, I can tell you. And now when I think about it, it's like, why didn't I know this earlier? I don't know, because if I look at my track record like y'all taught me to do, I would understand that, like, my thinking has never gotten me anywhere but fucked up, you know. And, I mean, an example is 5 years clean, I was in jail this time. For about a few hours, but as a result of some old behavior, you know, and some plan that I thought would work, you know, right? And but I still really couldn't understand that it was a problem with my thinking, you know. And it talks about in our literature, you know, unless we let go of our old ways of thinking, you know, we must, or we'll go back to using. And then using for me doesn't even have to be dope. So what it's been in the form of, I was in a very miserable marriage, that the second one, for 18 years. And I was in the process of, I was supposed to be in a step work process. I was actually on the seventh step a couple of years ago. We went to Germany, But what I recognize is that I really lost my mind. I don't know what happened to me. I was doing things I never did, had never not ever done before. I was just, you know, like really off the chain. And I left my husband. I was seeing, and I you know what, I don't even need to say this, but I was seeing another man who was married, this colonel. And my idea was, my plan was, because he was the commander of the post, and he started showing me a lot of attention, that, you know, it was professionally to my benefit to respond to his attention. You know, but I would never get involved with a married man. Like, I was all, one of my very big issues is judgmentalness, right? I am so judgmental. Like, it's like the worst thing that I don't like about myself and really want to change. And I work on, but one of the things I always judged was women who mess with other women's husbands, because I had a husband who cheated. So I thought, you know, like women who involved themselves with married men were the worst thing on earth. I would never, ever do that. You know, like never. You know, I just could not relate at all. And sure enough, I found myself in a relationship with this married man who was the commander of all four. I mean, you know, like I told y'all, when I go with extremes. So he's the commander. This is during the war, and he's the commander of four posts, a black man in charge of four military installations, the European command in Germany. So, you know, he's got a lot of eyes on him, right? It was kind of really insane to think. My husband worked in the community club on the base at the bar where all the gossip takes place. And somehow I thought that, you know, the word wouldn't get back to him that, like, you know, I'm in this blatant open relationship. So then I had a sponsor over there, and I'm on the seventh step, and she, you know, kept suggesting to me, you might want to rethink. And I was like, well, I don't want him anyway. You know, I don't want to be married anymore. It doesn't matter. That's what I thought. But I related to having lost my mind, because at the time I was praying for madness, you know. And when I think about that today, but what I understand is I have to go through everything I have to go through to get where I'm at. And the gratitude that I have even for that situation is because it brought me the most monumental pain that I have ever experienced. You know, I was in a fetal position in a lot of pain. But I didn't decide at that time it was time to change. That was 3 years ago. And I decided to compound the pain with this after my marriage ended and he found another woman and I found out he had another woman. I wanted the marriage back. So I was going to take myself through all kinds of hell and misery, you know, to get him back, because it was ego-driven, you know. And I went on this course for 6 months of desperately trying to save this marriage and fighting this other woman for my husband, and I didn't win. So then I picked up, like 2 days after I decided to surrender that, I picked up another person. It was, I called not to do anything with the person, but it was a Band-Aid, because I didn't want to feel, you know, like you know, I've never wanted to just go through some pain. I always had to pick up something to not feel. And so this time it was another person, and that lasted for like 18 months. And, of course, that didn't work, you know, because Band-Aids don't work. You can't put anything on an open wound and expect it to. And I was a walking open wound, trust me. I didn't look like it, and that's one of my problems. People always told me, they told me when I was using, you don't look like an addict. You know, I was like a totally dressed-up garbage can. And I always walk around smiling and, you know, because I'm happy about being here, for real. And I need to say that, you know, because my smile is not fake when I'm in Narcotics Anonymous. I love Narcotics Anonymous, and I love being in meetings that much that I can smile and mean it, right? But you don't know the sickness that's going on the inside. So anyway, I'm this walking garbage can, and I'm full of misery and pain, and I wanted to, you know, cover that up, and I did. And that didn't work, and so last year is when I decided that I needed to make a change. You know, like I was so miserable, and I knew that a change had to occur. And one thing I learned in here about words, you know, like we have these our own meanings in Narcotics Anonymous that, you know, I told y'all I knew a lot of stuff. But I've learned so much more. Words have taken on so much more meaning in here. And, like, we have our definition, the literature gives us for courage, which is not the absence of fear, but the willingness to walk through it. But I also do go to the dictionary because that's what I was taught. And it says that courage is the state or quality of mind or spirit that enables one to face danger, fear, or vicissitudes with self-possession, confidence, and resolution. And what my sponsor kept telling me through this process was, Carol, if you keep trying to avoid the pain and the lessons that God has given you, you're going to keep getting them, right? But I kept trying to avoid them. You know, I kept thinking that it was something outside of me, besides God, that was going to fix this, you know, or make it better or just avoid it. Like, I always want the easy way out, you know? And I just didn't understand, you know, truly how much going through something was going to help me. And I say that now because I tell y'all I've reached this place spiritually that I never even knew was possible. Like, the smile now is real through the inside, the joy. And even going through this pain, you know, the process, I think I'm pretty much on the other side. You know, it's been like a year. And when I say that, the joy is that I recognize so much about me that needs to be changed, right? And I know it ain't a finished work, but it's that I'm aware of it and I'm grateful for the opportunity. You know, I never was before. I looked at any kind of work or discomfort as a problem, you know, and today I really understand through what I've been, you know, I want to say going through, but that just sounds like a challenge, but just growing through, what I've been growing through this past year, you know, with sitting still. I made a conscious choice, and this might not be a big thing to a lot of people, but for me it really was, because I told y'all I had two husbands. I didn't say that I married one before divorcing the other. Like, I never was without a man, not for one day. Okay, so through this process, I mean, from the day I ever had one, I never was without one, ever. Okay, that's the truth. I got married while I was still married, and I had to go back and divorce to remarry. You know, it's crazy. Okay, and then I told y'all about the Band-Aid 2 days after. So anyway, this is big stuff for me, you know, in my story, is being not in a relationship of any sort for almost a year, like, you know. And so that was, because that's such a big stuff for me, I had to use some courage, right? Because there were many days that I just thought I could pick up a mandate, you know, just one. You know, my disease would tell me, just one. You know, it really ain't just one, right? And I'm saying it talked to me and it told me this on many occasions. And so it was big girl stuff for me. Not to. But anyway, I got some, like I said, I see, and like nobody else has to, because it really is an inside thing, the change that God has placed in me as a result of doing something different. You know, that was the simplest thing. Do something different this time, Carol, you know. And it says, change is to cause to be different, a completely different form or appearance, to transform. And what I'm getting out of this change is that I'm getting to that place that y'all talked about, that, you know, that we do get in the 12-step, the service, and the spiritual awakening of being, moving outside of myself and truly finding out that whatever I go through is not about me, but about being able to share and give back to another human being. And how I found that out, I was sitting in a meeting a couple of weeks ago, and somebody was sharing about going through something. I don't remember what it was. And she was saying, why do I have to go through this? And my immediate answer, I didn't even think about it, was you're going through this so that God is using you so you can share with somebody else how they can get through it clean. And I was like, where did that come from? Because it wasn't something that, like, you know, I mean, I didn't think about it, oh, that sound good or something. Somebody told me that's what I was feeling and that's what I'm living today. And, like, I'm truly grateful for God just to have the opportunity to be a vessel, you know, let God use me. To share with somebody else. I believe, and the guy last night was talking about the assignment. I really believe in that. Like, we, you know, this is a gift. This recovery is such a gift. You know, Narcotics Anonymous is a gift, but we got an assignment, and the assignment is to do some work, to have something on the inside so I can give back, you know, to share with another person. Man, it was a lot of stuff I wanted to share, but he gave me the five-minute thing. But just real quick, the Courage to Change page, it says that I'm going to pick out the most important part, that we can look at our own recovery experience. Even if that experience so far has been limited to stopping the use of drugs, we still have made many changes in our lives, changes for the good. Whatever aspects of our lives we have applied the steps to, we have always found surrender better than denial, recovery is superior to addiction. Our own experience and experience of others in NA tells us that changing things I can is a big part of what recovery is all about. The steps and the power to practice them give us the direction and courage we need to change. We have nothing to fear. Just for today, I welcome change. With the help of my higher power, I will find the courage to change the things that I can. And I just want to say, like, you know, life had just, I mean, I cannot even put into words to describe the joy that comes from knowing that, like, I'm making a choice to do something different for me. And knowing that God, I mean, first of all, I can't do it, but God can. And trusting him and not being paralyzed by fear. Because the core of all the, everything I ever did negative was fear. And so when I, you know, walking through that, through God and Narcotics Anonymous is just like, man, it's beautiful. It's really beautiful. And I always thank God for bringing me to Narcotics Anonymous. And I thank Narcotics Anonymous for bringing me back to the God of my understanding. Thanks for letting me share.